It's not strange for Israel, nor America, nor some European nations that are colonialist to enlist some of the Palestinian resistance factions on their terrorist organizations' lists. But it is very strange for some Arab countries to join these nations' efforts that are aimed at eliminating the Palestinian resistance by all means.
Thank President Hosni Mubarak for his leadership and his understanding of the situation, and also to thank the President of the United States, George W. Bush, the Secretary of State, Condoleezza Rice, for their endless efforts throughout the last 3 weeks in order to protect the right of Israel for self-defense against terrorist activities, and at the same time to help create the necessary international environment that will bring an end to hostilities while guaranteeing the right of Israel to defend itself against any aggression perpetrated by terrorist organizations from whichever direction.
Olmert's gratitude to Mubarak was not a result of nothing, but it was due to something. It was due to something between them, something that can be uncovered to us by Hossam Washah from Al-Buraij refugee camp in central Gaza. This 27-year-old youth was arrested by the Egyptian authorities, then transferred to one of the interrogation centers in the town of Al-Arish.
I was arrested along with an elderly man who's still in jail in Egypt. I was taken to Al-Arish and then to Al-Yadhiqli in Cairo. I was held by the National Security Forces. I received horrible treatment, interrogation, torture, and humiliation from the Egyptian National Security and Intelligence Services.
Ayman Nofel, 35, entered Egypt in the beginning of 2008, when thousands of Palestinians opened holes in the security fence between Gaza and Egypt, seeking to get urgent necessities lacking due to the shocking siege.
I was arrested on the 27th of January 2008 on my way to Al-Arish. I entered like everyone else. I was looking to buy necessities. It was during the days when the fence between Gaza and Egypt was penetrated. I was arrested inside Al-Arish city. The police pulled me over and found handguns with the other two guys in the same car. So we were transferred to Sector 4, and an hour later I was handed over to the National Security Agency.
Ramzi Al-Rai, a young man from Rafah, south of Gaza, was injured by an Israeli bullet and a tank shell fragment in 2004. He continued to suffer from the injury until 2010, when the Egyptian authorities allowed him to enter Egypt for treatment.
I got in around March 2010. I was injured during the Al-Aqsa Intifada. I had tank shell shrapnel in my body. I managed to get a permit for medical treatment in Egypt because I'd been advised to get shrapnel fragments removed, and that treatment was safer and better in Egypt. I booked a room at a hotel after arriving. After about 15 minutes, my room was raided. They threw me to the floor, handcuffed me, and began searching me and the room. I told them, "Why are you searching me? I have nothing. I'm here to get treatment." They said it was a security procedure. Then they took me outside and told me they would need me for only 5 minutes.
Mohammed Al-Hashim lives in northern Gaza. After the end of the war on Gaza in 2009, he and some of his friends decided to go perform the Umrah in Mecca through crossing Egyptian territories.
After living under siege for a long time, we really miss traveling abroad. So we registered for Umrah along with hundreds of others. Just like anyone else, we wanted to perform the Umrah in Saudi Arabia. We were a group included several that had injuries from war on Gaza. We went to Syria, where some got treatment and some others went to Iran for same purpose. We spent 11 months abroad awaiting permission to return home, but to no avail. We tried Egypt Air, but they rejected us. So we decided to fly Saudi Air. When we got off the plane in Cairo, they arrested us as soon as they saw our passports. Then they took us to the National Security Center.
The ceremony of this reception in Egypt went as follows.
I did not expect a strip search. After they strip searched me, I put my clothes back on. Then they brought me bread and cheese. I told them I wasn't hungry. The officer left the room. I thought he was going to bring a supervisor, but suddenly I felt a strong stinging sensation all over my body. They were electrocuting me. They used it on my head, back, and side. They said, "We told you, you will eat." Anyone who refused to eat got electrocuted.
As for Hassan Washah, his reception in the interrogation and torture center included insults, beatings, and other torture methods.
The intelligence services handed me to the National Security Agency. I'd already been tortured by the intelligence agents, but they did it to me again at the National Security Agency. For days, I was beaten, tortured, and humiliated.
Nofal was not one of the lucky Qassam fighters leaders in the treatment he got, despite the fact that the Egyptian security forces were aware that he is a leader in the Palestinian resistance and is wanted by the Israeli occupation.
They used beatings, fists, blindfolding, handcuffing, humiliation, and insults. They would threaten me, saying, "If you don't confess, we will undress you and give you an electric shock." They didn't, but I wish they would, because it would have been easier to tolerate than watching all those young men get electrocuted.
After 3 days, they began serious interrogation with me, which meant being stripped naked, tied to a metal bed, tied at the feet, with legs separated apart so that, as you can imagine, they would be able to electrocute me anywhere they could, like in the ears, tongue, and privates. They would rub a diesel fuel-soaked cloth on the body, which caused burn marks on the skin when electrocuted. It felt like your skin was on fire. Those torture sessions would last 1 or 2 hours.
The torture of Palestinian resistors behind the wall of Egypt's national security centers condemns Mubarak's former regime and proves it was connected to foreign intelligence services.
The arrest had definitely been ordered by Israel because of all the questions. They would ask, what is the structure of resistance? What kind of preparations have they made? How far can the rockets go? What kind of explosives and weapons do they possess? All those questions had something to do with Israel and didn't mean to harm Egypt in any way. The interrogator once told me, "In 2004, you were part of a resistance mission in Israel." I answered, "If I did something to the Jews, then why am I in prison in Egypt?" The officer answered, "My son, if we, in national security, could, we would burn Gaza."
It's not natural. You would feel that he is a Jew, like an Israeli interrogating you. Due to his intensive concern about Israel's security, you would feel that he is not a Muslim nor Arab. He does not have even the slightest bit of the Arab race in him. His questions include, did the Jews harm? All this that you see on TV, and he is asking me if the Jews harmed me? Did they personally harm you? I answered him, do they have to enter our house and kill my brother? So he asked again, so did they kill your brother or father, or torture you, or imprison you or your father? I answered him, "So it has to come on my head. They occupied and stole my land and murdered my people and killed and disfigured us. And you are asking me if they harmed me?"
According to Muhammad al-Hashim, torture methods were numerous and had a purpose. He never expected himself to face terror charges in an Arab country because he is a resister of the Israeli occupation.
We felt that those in national security and Egyptian security forces were looking for something. They always tried to get as much information as they could to serve Israel and America. For 30 years, that regime supported and protected Israel at the expense of humiliating Palestinians. It made them feel lost and worthless. The Americans paid the Egyptians $20 a day to keep in jail anyone who tried to harm Israel. Anyone. An alleged jihadist or a resistance fighter.
It was like the Israeli agents' interrogation style. While I was there, I felt like I was sitting in the interrogation rooms inside the Al-Magdal prison in Israel. They wanted information, and all their questions were focused on the resistance weapons, the structure of the Al-Qassam brigades, the range of missiles they had, and how Shalit was kidnapped and kept in captivity. Let's say all this was during the first month. After that, I was kept as a hostage to blackmail Hamas.
When torturing Palestinian resistors does not bring any results, they are thrown in Egypt's prisons in an attempt to make them hopeless so that they might give out information that can help the Egyptian security forces aid the Israeli occupation.
For 24 months, I was alone and isolated in Al-Marq prison in the district of Al-Golubiya next to Cairo. As a human being, I was concerned about the information I had and how I could withhold it, especially information about the resistance weapons and the Shalit issue. Speaking about these issues is very difficult. It's better to die a martyr than whisper about these issues. I thought of two scenarios on how to get released. Either Mubarak dies or Shalit is released. We had strong faith in God. The Egyptian revolution succeeded after Mubarak was removed. We hoped that after this toppling, we would be released from prison.
Ayman was detained in the corridors of Egypt's prisons along with 10 members of Al-Qassam fighters as part of a scheme to blackmail the Hamas movement. As for Muhammad al-Hashim, he was released after a 10-month journey of torture.
The Islamic Jihad leadership received the message saying their prisoners had been released. The situation in Egypt was very dangerous, so they moved us quickly. In July 2010, we were moved from Al-Kanater prison directly to the Rafah border crossing, and from there to the Palestinian side of the border. Thank God.
After a long suffering, Muhammad al-Hashim arrived in Gaza. As for Hassan Washah, he was transferred from Al-Arish prison to Abu Zabal prison in Cairo.
Abu Zabal prison is known around the world. I never thought that one day I'd be held in there. It's a well-guarded prison. I was in my cell 24 hours a day and not allowed to go out. I was placed with criminals convicted of stealing, murder, and selling drugs. Even though you are a political prisoner, they surround you with criminals to humiliate you.
Hassan might spend years, or even his entire life, in one of the worst prisons in Egypt with criminal convicts. As for Ramzi, the Egyptian interrogators are still making him taste the worst types of torture.
Suddenly he said to me, "Look, I will give you something you never saw before. Today I will break you. I pleaded, please have mercy. I will tell you whatever you want to hear. Look, so far I have managed to stand all the torture, including electrocution. At this stage, I told him, just get me a nice piece of paper and I will write all they wanted to know and sign it. He was surprised and told me to sit down. I started to sit, but I felt something was underneath me. Then someone hit me in the head and I plunged down. I suddenly felt a burning electrical current run through my body. I was being electrocuted from the inside. It was nothing like the other type of electrocution. I cannot even begin to describe the pain. Honestly, it's inexplicable.
Despite his begging and requests for mercy, Ramzi was still tortured in this way more than once.
The next day he asked me, "Are you mocking me? You say you will talk when things get serious, but then you don't." I said, "I wanted to tell you to please have mercy on me." Once again, he sat me on the electric chair like it wasn't enough to get electrocuted through the rectum wounds. When they transferred me to Abu Zab prison, I felt like a ball of blood with long hair and nails. My fellow brethren were shocked. They cleaned me up. My journey of suffering and ill treatment came to an end.
Ramzi's goal in Egypt was to get treatment for the wounds he had sustained at the hands of the Israeli occupation army. But the interrogation and torture he received in Egypt added to his wounds in ways he never imagined.
We hope that the Egyptian army would take a serious humanitarian look at the circumstances and case of Ramzi Arai, because his health is in a very bad situation, and he has never been proven to be criminal, nor had done anything bad to Egypt.
After the passing of 1 year for Ramzi in Egyptian prisons, and 3.5 years for Ayman and Hassan Washa, the promise of the January 25th revolution began to loom in the horizon, which reignited hope for the tens of millions that awaited for it for too many years. This Arabian revolution came to change an abusive, merciless regime that inflicted on Egyptian and those around them the worst types of torture, a regime that turned Egypt from the beating heart of the Arab and Islamic world to an economically, politically, and socially poor nation.
We heard gunfire in the afternoon of the 29th. They closed up Abu Zab prison. We felt there is something going on. The TV showed there was trouble outside. There was regular gunfire. The prisoners began breaking the doors and heading for freedom. Some were killed or injured. The prisoners' families helped us. And along the way, we didn't encounter one single roadblock.
On Saturday, we heard that Abu Zab prisoners had gotten out. At 8 a.m. Sunday, January 30th, we broke down the doors and got out of prison. We walked near family homes where we met a nice-looking man. We explained to him we were Palestinian resistance fighters who had been imprisoned by the evil Mubarak regime. The man sympathized with us and let us use his phone. He also helped us get a car. We stayed at his house and moved from house to house until we reached Gaza.
Around the beginning of the Egyptian Revolution on January 29th, Hassan arrived in Gaza as the first Palestinian liberated from Egyptian prisons. and 3 days after him, Nofal arrived home to his family. As for the family of Ramzi R.A., they were the last to meet him. Luckily, for them, time passed quickly.
We were waiting for his return, so my sons went to receive him, and they were quite ready to receive their father, but there was no destiny yet. Of course, he was in the prison like all other prisoners. They were surprised of the groups of people raiding the prison, breaking the walls and doors, liberating the prisoners. He was also liberated.
The doors of prison opened and armed men entered. They clashed with the government forces inside. And before we knew it, we were on the streets not knowing where to go until a car took us to the Ismailia area, and from there we headed to Al Arish. As luck would have it, we were captured by the army. We thought it was going to be prison and torture again. They asked us what we were doing there. Then they transferred us by military planes to Al Aqraba prison.
Ramzi did not have to stay in prison for too long, because after the collapse of the Mubarak regime, he was released and returned home to reunite with his family.
I was in jail for exactly 10 days. I had a release order, so I was released. I was very happy to be free. It felt like a dream to be out and on the way home. When I arrived in Palestine, I could not believe my eyes. I knelt down and kissed the ground. Then I met my friends, my family, and my mother. I felt like I had been born again.